In this episode of the Backend Engineering Show, I continue exploring Internet Information Services, or IIS. So this is the Microsoft web server. And how does it perform as a backend technology? How about we jump into it? Welcome to the Backend Engineering Show with your host, Hussein Nasser. And in this episode, I want to continue exploring IIS, specifically a section in the product that's called application pooling and the advanced section in that feature. There are obviously a lot of features in the application pool settings, so I might take multiple videos to discuss each of them in details. And the reason I do this is just so I can give each section its justice, sort of. So I'll start with the application pooling. What is an application pool? We talked about this many times in this channel, and the idea of a pool, really, in backend, is when you pool different resources together to serve a general purpose. Popular example of pooling is connection pooling. I talked about it many times in this channel. Establishing a connection is expensive. There is the TCP handshake that you need to perform. There is any setup that you need on top of that at the application layer to initialize. And that cost translates to performance, latency, right? So we usually preheat connections on the backend, especially to databases, right? And then we keep them warm, ready. And since we almost these days build always stateless application, it doesn't matter which connection I get served with. I can use any connection, execute my query, and get back and release it back to the pool. And the idea of recycling and reusing connections increase the performance in general of web applications, specifically that web application are stateless and they are massive, and the volume of requests are huge. So application pool specifically in IIS is not really has to do with databases, but it has to do with processes. Again, so it's just resources at the end of the day. So the application pool concept is this logical thing that you can create and assign to your application. In a nutshell, it's basically a group of processes that help serve your application. So if a request come in, you can pick one process from the pool and then serve the request to that process. So if there another request comes in, and while this process is busy, you can pick another process to serve your request. Thus, you're pooling processes, right? That's why IIS is a multi-process web server. We've seen many web servers pick different models here. Node.js is a single process, single-threaded. You can configure it to be multi-threaded, but by design, it is always single-threaded. Yeah, some people say, hey, Hussein, it's multi-threaded. I talked about threading in Node.js. There are specific areas where Node.js is multi-threaded, but check out the video. I don't want to continue discussing this topic. But Apache is also multi-threaded. Tomcat is multi-threaded. So there is a one process, multiple threads running, okay? And you this is always a design choice that we backend engineers need to understand, because there's always a pros and cons for each one of them. There's no right or wrong, it depends what you're trying to do. But just understanding what this is, very critical. And this application pool, when you create it, you get a lot of settings that you can tweak, which plays on your favor, based on what we're trying to do. So let's go ahead and continue diving into this kind of settings. There's a lot of sections, so we're gonna maybe talk about one or two in this video. Maybe in the future, we're gonna explore the rest of them in future videos. So when you install IIS, you get one default application pool, right? And it's always not recommended to use that pool for your application. You gotta create a new one. Yeah, if you want to test something, sure, but if you're really building an app, you gotta create your own pool. You should have your own settings for the pool. So, and as you can see, you can go to the advanced section, advanced settings, and here are some of the sections that you can configure. general. There is a general section about the number of processes, the style of programming that you support. There is a CPU configuration, process model, process orphaning, rapid fail protections, and recycling. And this is not all of it, by the way, guys. There are so many other settings buried down that we can go into in the future and play with them. So if we expand the general section, we can see the following properties. There's a .NET common language runtime version, and in this property, and this property specifies what kind of .NET framework your apps run into. So if for those who build .NET applications, there is something called the language runtime, which is the framework. .NET is built very similar to Java, where you have a runtime and then you build your app on top of the runtime. So theoretically, .NET can run on any operating system. I think recently you can start running your .NET application on Linux. I never run it before. For the longest time, I always run my .NET app on Windows. The rest of the stuff is really legacy stuff, like enable 32-bit applications. I remember enabling this specifically because my app back in 2005, maybe, was 32-bit, and I wanted to expose it as a web app. So I had to compile it with 32-bit, and I had to enable this option on my pool. There is obviously the managed pipeline mode. You can have integrated and versus classic. This is a Microsoft way to kind of come back to the CGI, the Common Gateway Interface. We can go into an older video talking about that. But basically, CGI, we use always to build desktop application, right? Executables, right? And when the web came in, we could not link those two together because, hey, this is an executable, EXE, or binary on Linux. And then we have this web thing that how can I connect to them? How can I run my EXE from my web application? So people invented this idea of CGI that when a request comes in with certain information, you can pass it to a process that runs that executable and pass it all the parameter, execute, and then gives you back the information. Obviously, that was very slow because you're literally spinning up a new exe with every request. Yikesy. Microsoft came back with something called ISAPI, the Internet Services API, which kind of removes the idea of exe, but converts it into a DLL, so you can build a DLL. So once you link it, you link that DLL with your IIS, with your web server, it's hot in memory. So you don't have to do this re-spinning up of this exe every time, as long as you comply with their interface details and stuff like that. But this is the classic way of doing things. So the new way is the integrated, where everything is baked into the request itself. So natively, right? There is no this extra thing that you have to do. So nobody almost uses the classic way. Nobody. There are people who use a CGI still, I think. I never use CGI. I always use this classic way when I had an EXE that I wanted to call in. But yeah, this is all things that are just basically legacy stuff. Yeah, they are not dying away. These things are not going to die away. There are still people who have old, I don't know, MS-DOS EXE that they need to run, and this application they don't know how to rewrite it, and it does something, and they want to run it in the web. CGI and ISAPI is going to be there forever. And obviously, the most interesting thing here is the queue length, really. And this is how many requests can we queue into the application pool, after which I will return an error to the user. Because at the end of the day, when you send a request to this application, and the application is using this particular pool of processes, right? If all these processes are busy, you get to queue. The request gets queued. And what does that mean? That means the connection itself, the acknowledgement of the packet happened, but the request data has been delivered to the queue, and as far as the client is concerned, the request has been received technically, and it is the client technically don't know if it's queued or not, right? It's just, hey, it's there. So now, how many of these requests can I queue? before I just gave up and just returned an error. This is a nice property that I've seen similar properties in HAProxy, and I've seen similar properties in Nginx. They are just named differently, but I've seen these properties. It's a must, I think. You have to have a number of requests, after which that, hey, you know what? There are a lot of requests being processed. Let's just give up. Right. All right. Let's go to the next section. And we're gonna just explain this section and then end this video. Let's keep it short because the rest of the sections require more details, to be honest. So we'll talk about the CPU here. Right. And the first property here is the limit percentage. And the default is zero. So when you execute, when you send a request, and this request is CPU bound, right? And I talked about CPU bound versus IO bound. What's the difference, really? But this process is hungry for the CPU. It just smashes the CPU all day. So I don't know. This process is doing computation, expensive computation, like cryptographic compression, stuff like that. That's always hitting the CPU, right? This is as opposed to just sending a query to a database all over the network. So the process technically is not doing anything. It's just doing I/O or writing to disk, doing a lot of logging to disk. So the CPU bound processes are one of the most expensive processes. And you need to identify those processes because most computers are kind of measured by their CPU, right? Because CPU is more expensive than the RAM. Like, you can add that, all the RAM you want, but the CPU is the core, is the heart. So if there is a runaway, a process that is doing nasty stuff and is consuming 100% of the CPU, this process then can actually take down your entire server, right? Send multiple requests of those, multiple processes, all of a sudden your application pool is saturated, and when the application pool is saturated, your computer becomes saturated. So you need to find and tweak those, and this section allows you to do that. So the way this setting work is for these three properties. So limit percentage, limit action, and limit interval, right? So I wish they actually flipped the limit interval and they made it before the action because it reads better. But here's how you read it effectively. Right? Limit percentage will say, okay, if one of the processes reaches this particular percentage, let's say you put limit percentage as 90, right? If one of the processes reaches 90%, not just that, just it can reach it for a second, right? But no, it continues for an interval, so that's the second property, for an interval of 5 minutes, that's the default. So if it reaches 90%, no, and not just 90%, it has to do 90% or more for at least 5 minutes, continuous. If it did that, then do this action. And what is this action? You have plenty of actions here. You can either terminate the process, just kill the whole process altogether. And then I wasn't really sure if this kills the whole pool or kills just that process. It wasn't clear from the description, but my guess is just kills that process. It just doesn't make sense to kill everything else, right? So if that happens, then it will kill, it will issue a kill request. It will issue a shutdown, right? And then we're going to come to that later. What does that mean? Web servers never ever terminate something a hard way like this. Like, okay, let's just kill this process. No, they always give it something called a grace period. And I talked about that in my Nginx video. There's something literally called grace shutdown timeout, right? Where if I ask you to shut down, do a SIG, I think it's called SIG shut, I am actually going to give you a grace period for this amount of minutes. And that's another configuration that's going to come in another video where, hey, if I send you this shutdown request, you better shut down in a minute and a half. So as a backend engineer, you gotta calculate all that stuff, right? So technically, the process will be running for 5 plus 1.5 minutes. It's gonna be 6.5 minutes hogging your CPU. So if you can't afford 6.5 minutes, then reduce that from 5 to 4 or 3 minutes. So the total has become 5 minutes or whatever you can tolerate effectively. But this is the action. The shutdown period, you have to calculate a part of this thing as well. And there's also another thing called suspend. It's like, okay, suspend or throttle. Suspend, I think, it just pauses the process, right? So it doesn't really kill it. It just pauses it. So it can be resumed later. Now, I have no idea how it gets resumed. I gotta maybe read on that a little bit. But yeah, throttle says, hey, okay, let me throttle you because 90% is a lot. You're doing so much. You get only, I don't know, 40% of my CPU from now on. So I think this is a very attractive feature. And I don't remember seeing this particular configuration in my other exploration of other reverse proxies, to be honest. They might exist, don't get me wrong. I might have your foreground because I might actually just forgot because, hey, there's so much going on here, right? So yeah, it's just very interesting. I absolutely love this feature in IIS. It gives you control over this thing. And then there is another three properties called processor affinity. And I personally never use this, but I can imagine someone needing this particular feature or settings. And let's talk about it a little bit. So a processor affinity is when in Arabic we call it sharaha, which means I am very hungry. I have a huge affinity to this particular process. I don't like these other processes. I just like this one. Effectively, what you do with this is you make your process have certain affinity to a given processor, right? So it focuses and runs only on one or two processors instead of all these processors. And I don't know what they mean by processor here. Do they mean cores or physical process? Because a processor can have multiple cores, right? So again, these settings are enterprise settings. If you have like a machine with, I don't know, 5 processors, can you even do that? I don't know. I don't know much hardware. But if you have a lot of processors and each processor have a lot of, cores in each processor. I know there are 2 processors. There might be more than 1 processor. And that's where non-uniform memory access, NOMA, comes into the picture, where each processor have its own memory slot, right? DIMM, kind of. So each processor have a local memory access for fast access, right? All of this stuff is really interesting to me. I'm just kind of picking up slowly. Right. So you can have multiple processes. And don't ask me how many you can get. That's actually a good thing that I might research after the video. How many processors can a motherboard have? What's the maximum number? And how many cores in that processor? So come back to these settings. Is the process in a given application, in a given application pool, can have certain affinity to one processor or another one, or just one of them. Why? Why you might say you want your process to always run on one processor and are given even core in that processor. Okay? The reason is you want to utilize that hot cache in that processor, the L1s, the L2, the L3 cache. So that, because context switching from one process to another processor, you gotta refetch certain information that you have already cached. And the application, if you for by default, there is no affinity, right? It's like, hey, if I execute a process, you can be executed on any core, on any different processor. There is no specific thing. But if you're given this option with this thing that's called a processor affinity mask, which is just basically, it's a bit mask, right? This number that you're seeing, like 4, what is the bad number? 4 billion something. Is it even a billion? 4 trillion? Yeah, 4 billion something. This is basically, it's all ones effectively, which means, hey, you can run on any processor that is, right? But you can specify, like, okay, I want you to run on processor 1 and processor 2, right? Or even core 1 or core 2, right? I really think this is core, not processor, to be honest. but I might be wrong. So you can configure this bitwise operator. You can build a bit gate that that runs only on these cores or these three cores. And as a result, not only your application core will be, first of all, limited to a certain process, so it cannot do a runaway and kill your entire machine, right? No, it will also be very performant, specifically if you're doing calculations that reuse certain values. So the cache in the processor will be reused very often. You're going to start seeing some performance gain. How much? I have no idea. It really depends on your use case. So yeah, guys, I don't remember seeing this affinity option in any other reverse proxies on web servers, to be honest. They might, don't get me wrong, they might exist, but it's just very interesting to me that I've been just doing this deep dive into IIS, and I'm going to do this for other web servers as well, because I did this for HAProxy, I did this for Nginx, I did this for Envoy, I did this for Caddy. I'm doing this just I'm basically Ash Ketchum. I'm going to catch them all. That's my goal. I'm going to catch all the web servers. That all the web servers are Pokemons, and I'm going to catch them all. That's my goal, basically. So I will go back to HAProxy. I'll go back to Nginx and then just see the things that I might have missed and then look them through a different lens, right? And yeah, guys, let's leave it at that. In the next episode, we're going to explore the processes section because, yeah, because if you noticed, there we didn't see a section where we configure the number of processes, which is the most important thing in the pool, right? How many processes can I run on my pool? And you'll be surprised that the default pool has a very bad configuration that you shouldn't really use. That's one of the reasons that you shouldn't use the default pool. All right, guys, that's it for me today. I'm going to see you in the next one. You guys stay awesome. Goodbye. Welcome to the Backend Engineering Show with your host, Hussein Nasser. This is the show where we discuss the art and the craft of building software and cover recent news on backend technologies. If you enjoy the show, make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel and rate it on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. With that said, let's get on the show.